From the unexplained to the mundane, come join us on a journey to the fringe. Hello and welcome to Journey to the Fringe, where it's Serpo all the time. We are your podcast hosts, Taylor and Chelsea, here today, reaching back on an old topic that we have done two episodes on the past. Chelsea, are you ready for it? It's Serpo.
Oh, I'm excited.
Okay.
Revisiting this, over a year ago?
Over a year ago, yes.
Oh, those were great episodes.
For those of you that can't be bothered to go back, these are fantastic episodes. I highly recommend going and re-listening to them because they are a lot of fun. But yeah, Cole's notes, there's papers out there that say that a group of 12 humans were sent on a 10-year galactic trip to a planet named Serpo, and they came back after 12 years. Only 8 of them came back alive. And everything was hidden. At the end of it, looks like Richard Doty just made up the whole thing, but there's a whole story behind it. Project Camelot's involved. There's a lot of fun and shenanigans. So I highly recommend re-listening to it. And Chelsea, I just want to start this episode off. Do you remember how we left Serpo.org off last time around?
The website was not being paid for, if I remember correctly. Yeah. I re-listened to it, but I didn't actually make it to the end of the second episode.
Hilariously, there was a notice for whoever owns this website, please pay for it because you haven't paid in months and we're not going to host it anymore until you pay for it again.
Yeah, okay. My memory was, good. I'm glad my memory's not going. Okay, great.
I had to do everything through the Wayback Machine, which I still do have to do. But Chelsea, I want you to go to Serpo.org now.
Yes. I was waiting for it.
Because something has changed in the meantime, and it was very recent. Like, I was on here about a month ago, and it was still the same.
What is this?
It is now a conference for Serpo. This seems so fake. And we're just going to read through
like
it together.
AI?
It definitely seems like AI. So we're going to start off. It just says Serpo. It has a few different things to click on the top. And then it says, welcome to our conference on the top secret exchange program of 12 U.S. military personnel to Serpo planet Zeta Reticuli between 1965 and 1978. Conference organizers, John Harris, Bryce Mead, Marsha Coleman. Can't click on their names. These are such generic names that you can't Google them.
They don't look like real people, do they?
No.
They don't. These look like AI-generated images.
They look like stock images.
But John Harris definitely looks like AI.
I don't know.
He does.
Maybe.
Yeah, he does.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And there's an about section. We are pleased to welcome you to a conference on one of the most mysterious and controversial topics in history, the Serpo Exchange Program. Between 1965 and 1978, 12 U.S. military personnel entered into a top-secret deal with the planet Zeta Reticuli, embarking on a journey that has been the subject of rumors and myths for years. This conference is an attempt to uncover the truth surrounding this amazing story. We have gathered leading experts, researchers and scholars to sort out the details and bring you the most reliable sources of information. What will you learn at this conference? Exchange operation details. You'll hear firsthand accounts from those involved in the program and learn how they left Earth and what happened to them on Serpo. Right there is a huge red flag. Even if you believe the story of Serpo, they've all died. There are no firsthand accounts anymore. They all died by 2002.
Okay.
Historical context. We will look at the history and political circumstances that led to the program and try to understand its significance in the context of the Cold War and the space race. Evidence analysis. Experts will analyze the available evidence and testimony to sort out the truth and falsity of various aspects of the story. Discussion and questions. You will be given the opportunity to ask questions and participate in discussions with the experts to gain a fuller understanding of the topic. We believe that the story of Serpo Exchange represents a pivotal moment in human history, and our goal is to uncover this story in all its complexity and mystery. Join us at the conference to delve into a world of mystery and discovery together. Chelsea, I don't think I need to ask you, but that does sound very AI written, does it not?
I can't even form a thought on this. What is going on?
I don't know. The next part, it says, register now to uncover a mysterious chapter of history. When you click on the contact button, you can enter your name, your email, the subject, your message, which is optional. And that's all it says. And it gives you a phone number, which is an area code 901, and a location, which is 875 Burton Avenue, Memphis. That's not even a full address.
I'm currently sending a message because I don't feel like it gives us details on how to sign up.
It does not.
Do I sign up? I'm sending a message
but
right now.
I do know that it is going to happen at the end of April. I think it's April 25th to 28th. It doesn't say 2025, but it's likely 2025.
I just sent a message. It has not submitted. submitted yet.
I just love, they have an outline of the first 3 days too, the 3 days. So here's first day, 9 to 9:30, registration of participants and welcome coffee. 9:30 to 10, conference opening. Opening remarks by the organizer and introduction to the topic. 10 to 11:30, history of Serpo Exchange Program. Examination of the historical context and major events of the period 1965 to 78. 11:30 to 12:30, key participants and their roles, introducing the key figures involved in the program, analyzing their roles and contributions. 12:30 to 2, lunch break, and then workshops. Documentary evidence from 2 to 3:30, an exploration of the documents and archives presented related to the Serpo Exchange Program. 3:30 to 5, dealing with the sensational evidence, practical cases for analyzing and interpreting testimonies of program participants. 7 to 9, projection of a documentary film about the Serpo Exchange Program, followed by discussion. That just is so vague. I don't even know who's presenting. Like, they haven't said that. I don't think they say that on any of the days. They do have testimonials. I don't know how, because this hasn't happened yet. But Richard LaFoon said this conference proved to be an incredible immersion into the historical context and details of the top secret Serpo Exchange Program. I was amazed at the level of detail provided by the speakers, and I am sure I learned a lot about the government's covert operations. That's the end of Richard. Rebecca Mullen says, wonderful conference. Listening to the program participants' stories related to the Serpo Exchange Program was fascinating. Gave me an in-depth look at events I had previously only heard about in rumors. The organizers did a great job bringing together so many experts on the topic. And Curtis Morales says, it was an amazing event full of interesting facts and fascinating stories. I'm deeply impressed with how the organizers were able to gather such a variety of perspectives on the topic of the top secret exchange program at Serpo. Each speaker added something unique to this fascinating mosaic of history. That's the end of the testimonials. And I have to say, each person has their own picture. Again, could be very clearly stock footage. Not one of them happened to mention any of these great speakers, who they were. And then Chelsea, once you get to that point, there's a blog with some things, but below that, there is nothing but casino advertisements.
Just Google this 875 Barton Street in Memphis. It's just a residential neighborhood.
Oh man, I need to see this.
This is the weirdest. Like, there's not even sidewalks. And I sent a message to see how do I sign up, and it doesn't submit.
Huh. Well, yeah, this is weird.
Can I just, I don't know if this is, no, I can't call the United States, can I?
Well, you can, but like, don't call right now.
Why?
They do have an entire articles they've posted on this website, but I wasn't going to focus on these. I just found this so interesting that somebody has taken over the Serpo website and decided to do, like, I don't know. It seemed like maybe an AI scam, but like, what are they scamming? Are they just trying to get people to those casinos at the bottom? Because there's way easier ways to get people to click on casino ads than to create this entire fake conference and then put casino ads at the bottom.
It's clearly all AI.
Well, and first and foremost, the first casino is safecasinos.com. So you know, actually, never mind, that this is legit.
Address and the phone. That has to be it. It has to be.
Yeah, there's 18 casino links.
Copyright 2025 Serpo, all rights reserved.
And if you click on Serpo, it takes you back to this page.
Well, it's just another bizarre thing. Yeah, I can't submit anything to find out how to attend the conference.
But anyhow, it says it's April 26th to 28th. It doesn't have a year. There are testimonies about how good it was in super vague terms. So maybe it's already happened. I don't know. If you guys happen to be in the Memphis area, if you could check this out for us, I would be super interested if you could kind of dig into it, because we're too far away and lazy to look into this.
Well, I think we've looked at it enough. I wouldn't recommend anybody going to this 875 Barton Street.
They're just waiting there to stab people.
They might get a lineup April 26th. Who knows? What a weird thing, though.
Oh, man. Sorry, I had to Google Maps this really quick.
Please, take a look.
Because it looks like a big building. Oh, no, it's not. Wow.
It's not.
That
it's a house.
One page. Yeah, that one page definitely described it in a different way. Oh, yeah, it's not a nice neighborhood either.
Doesn't seem like it, but I don't know anything about...
Is it a different Memphis?
Does it specifically say Memphis, Tennessee?
No, it says Memphis.
It does say Memphis. But this is where it took me on Google Maps, so I assume that's the right place. I don't know. What a weird thing.
Yeah. Anyhow, that actually has nothing to do with the story I was going to do today. I just thought it was crazy that there has been that update on the webpage.
I'm glad you went and looked. As soon as you said that, I was like, I'm going to go look.
No, what we're going to do is, I thought it would be fun just because the entire story of Serpo was leaked to a UFO email group back in the early 2000s, and it was leaked over the course of about 3 years. So I thought it would be fun to just go through and read some of the leaks and the stories that were coming out about Serpo around that time, because we gave a brief idea, but I thought it'd be fun to get more into the detail. And whenever we're just kind of feeling like it, we can read some of the Serpo stories. So let's return to Serpo with some of these stories. Chelsea, I wanted to start with about the team and their selection process.
Okay, I'm up for that.
This was posted originally November 29th, 2005. It was the 8th posting by Anonymous. I decided to concentrate this release on the team and their selection process, communication problems, and the final exchange. There have been many questions pertaining to these issues. Background. EB1, for those that need a bit of background on it, the EBs were what they called the aliens. They're not grays, but they're basically grays. EB1 provided a communication device that allowed us to contact Serpo. This communication device was on board the Eben spacecraft that crashed in July 1947 near Corona, New Mexico. EB1 showed us the proper use of this communication device prior to his death. However, the device did not function properly and no contact could be made with Serpo. Just prior to EB1's death, an American scientist from Los Alamos figured out the device worked and connected an energy source found in the Eben craft to the communication device. With EB1's assistance and language input, several signals were sent during the summer of 52. In early fall of 52, we received several signals on the device. EB1 translated the messages and provided us with that information. EB1 sent 6 messages. The first message was just letting his planet know he was alive. Second message explained the crash in 47 and the death of his crew. The third message asked for a rescue craft for him. The fourth message suggested a formal meeting with leaders of Earth. The fifth message suggested an exchange program, which that seems like a very weird way to communicate everything, does it not?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I'm alive. Everybody else is dead. Please come rescue me. Do you want to meet the people who I'm with? And then, hey, let's create an exchange program. I mean, the fifth one seems right.
Yeah, it really escalates quickly.
Should you not immediately say, hey, come rescue me? Like, it seems weird that they waited until the third message to do that.
And why would they want to create an exchange program without vetting people that they're, you know, exchanging with?
Yeah, it's a weird circumstance.
But if we're awful people.
We are awful people.
Yeah.
Joke's on them. No, it is believed but not documented that EB1's U.S. military caretaker had suggested to EB1 that an exchange program be set up, which would allow our people to visit and exchange culture, scientific information, and collect astronomical during a space trip by an American military team, or what eventually became known as the team members. And just so we're all on the same page, I'm reading it as is. If there seems to be a mistake, it is in the original documentation. Then, of course, the sixth message provided landing coordinates for any future rescue or visitation missions to Earth. The incoming message gave a time and date and confirmed a landing location. However, once the message was translated by EB1, it was determined that the date was over 10 years away. Fearing that EB1, who was sick at this point, did not translate the message correctly, our scientists began to translate the message based on the Eben language that was taught to us by EB1. Nope, he was a mechanic, not a scientist. He was still able to teach us some of the Eben language, and according to the documents which I read, we translated about 30% of the Eben language. Complex sentences and numbers could not be recognized. Oh man, so they got the idiot.
Yep, even though they all had really high IQs.
They all have really high IQs except for the mechanic, who apparently got a concussion when they crashed.
Totally forgot all language.
Yes. No. He had 30% of it. You gotta love that. And that is one of the parts of the story I love, that they're all geniuses, except they don't understand English. Like, yeah. No way of understanding it.
Except for, like, in most things.
Yeah.
Interactions. Except for when they can.
EB1 assisted as long as he was alive, but once he died, then we were on our own. We sent several messages over a 6-month period, but we did not receive any messages. We fine-tuned our efforts over the next 18 months and finally sent 2 messages in 55 and received a reply. We were able to translate about 30% of the message due to that idiot mechanic. Sorry, I had to add that part. We turn to several linguist specialists with... Why are they only now turning to the linguists? Oh, God. We turn to several linguist specialists from several U.S. universities, even several from foreign universities. Finally, we were able to translate most of the messages. We decided to reply in English and see if the Ethans could translate our language easier than we could theirs. Approximately 4 months later, we received a reply in broken English. Sentences contained nouns, adjectives, but no verbs. It took us several months to translate the messages, and then we sent even our typed English lessons. 6 months later, we received another English message. This time it was clearer, but not clear enough. Evens were confusing several different English words and still failed to complete a proper sentence.
They're judging them based on this?
Not only that, they
because
said they could...
Because we won't even try their language.
But it said we figured it out.
We gave up.
But we figured it out. Finally, we were able to translate most of their messages, but we decided to reply in English.
But isn't that a weird way to reply, like, or make note of? Which is the whole Serpo papers, like, they replied in no, what was it, no verbs?
Yeah, no they nouns. Replied with no
whatever
verbs.
Whatever it is.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't, does that make sense to you? I don't think it makes sense to me that they're just not replying with one very specific part of speech.
And that specific part of speech is very important to being able to convey any material. You can't convey information without an action. Like, that's just, like, such a fundamental part of communication that we can't even do a sentence without it. No.
Actions, yeah. Because actions would be universal, you would think.
Yeah, it would be, like, fluffy kitty something. Kitty tower. I don't know. That's it.
You wouldn't even get that they were talking, really.
No.
And it's obviously part of their speech because they wanted to have an exchange program. So it's a part of their speech. Why wouldn't they be able to grasp that part, even if they were
and
just
this,
like
it's
trying
just
to
one of the weird parts of the story. They're just like, yeah, English seems really stupid. We're not going to learn it. We're too smart for you idiots.
It seems like a stupid detail to put in there for somebody who's putting too much detail into something that they're making up. Just like all the Serpo stuff.
But we were able to provide the basic skill level for them to communicate in English. In one message, they provided us with a form of the Even alphabet with the equivalent English letters. Our linguist specialist had a very difficult time figuring this out. That doesn't seem hard to figure out.
It doesn't because they gave the translation.
They gave the literal translation. Written Even really language cool. Was simple characters and symbols, but our linguist specialist had an extremely difficult time comparing the two written languages. Over the next 5 years, we were able to perfect our understanding of the Even language, in brackets, somewhat.
We're all mechanics. Even our smartest linguists are mechanics.
And the Evens were able to better understand English. However, we had a major problem trying to coordinate a date, time, and location for an Even landing on Earth. Even though we could basically understand some Even and the Evens could understand some English, we could not understand their time and date system and they could not understand ours.
Well, that makes sense.
We sent them our Earth rotation schedule, revolution, date system, etc. For some reason, the Evens never understood this.
Can I just get this straight? They're basically just texting back and forth and based on like a hey, how are you doing? They're expecting to like learn a whole other language, or are they actually like speaking with each other to try and teach the language?
Well, you got to remember that I think Serpo is like 33 light years away. This is not like they haven't actually explained the time difference between the two. Now that I'm thinking about it. In theory, well,
it
should take like 33 right years to get communications,
well, that's
but
true.
It doesn't seem to be taking that time at all.
It's like a text message right now. It seems like a detail somebody didn't think of, but to me, the way I'm interpreting this is they're just like, hey, want to have an exchange program, and based on that, they're just, let's see if they respond to us in English, and they're like, they'll just learn English based on this text message. Yeah.
And we easily learn Serpo.
Yeah.
Serponese. We're not gonna use it. It seems stupid.
Yeah, based on, like, it just seems like one message, and they're like, they'll get it. And then they respond without verbs, and they're like, these idiots. They clearly don't understand English.
They're clearly all mechanics over like, there.
Yeah, it seems like they've just sent one
also, text. How did they know he's a mechanic? He didn't speak English. That's a fairly complicated word for him to know in the 30% of the language he knew.
Again, just seems like something somebody made up. Oh, the Serpo vision.
In return, the Eben sent us their system, which was difficult for our scientists to understand because we had no reference to their planet. The Ebens did not explain any astronomical data of Serpo or their system. We then decided to just send pictures showing Earth landmarks and a simple numbering system for time periods. The Ebens sent back a message indicating they would return to Earth on a particular number, date, and location that we chose. The date was April 24th, 1964, and the location was the southern sector of a White Sands missile range, New Mexico. Which, they're having trouble understanding, like, astronomical coordinates, but they can tell April 24th, 1964?
Yeah, obviously. They figured it out in time.
Now our government officials met in secret to plan the event. Decisions were made, then changed, and then changed again. We had just about 25 months to plan for the event. Special teams, mostly military, were formed to plan the event. Several months into the planning process, President Kennedy decided to approve a plan to exchange a special military team. The United States Air Force was tasked as the lead agency. The Air Force officials picked special civilian scientists to assist in planning and crew selection. The team member selection process was the hardest to accomplish. Several plans were suggested in the makeup of the team. It took several months for the planners to decide on criteria for each team member. They decided that each team member must be military. They must be single with no children. They must be a career military over 4 years of service. They must have special skills.
Special skills.
It just is special skills. I'm glad they agreed.
Just like really good at Cat's Cradle. The best.
This guy's double jointed.
Yeah.
This guy can do a backflip.
This guy's really good at hula hooping.
And what's the 50s? They must have cross-trained skills, meaning that they must have more than one specialty. They must be entirely sheep-dipped and cleared of any identification problems that would haunt them while on the trip. I don't know, but it's in quotation marks.
Sheep-dipped.
One suggestion was to list all members as being dead. This was thrown out around until it was decided each team member selected would be listed as missing on the official records and discharged on the unofficial records. That way, all connections between the team and their individual service was covered.
Hold on a second. I gotta share my screen.
Did you Google sheep dip? Yeah.
And while there was a more fitting answer, I'm showing you the other one.
Oh no, is this where they get rid of pest on them by dipping them in this like liquid? Yes. Yep, they're getting rid of the pest on the sheep.
Okay, that's it. But hold on, there was a more fitting answer. Practice within the intelligent community of assisting to agents non-intelligence or military jobs in order to disguise their source agency.
Okay, so they couldn't know each other's background, I guess?
I guess
I think so. It comes up later that that's basically what it was.
Right underneath, there's an actual sheep getting dipped again.
Okay. It's weird that they would try to hide the identity of everybody when they're going to be together for 10 years. How is that going to work? And you have no coverage for it.
That's true. And you're going to be sharing things when, you know, you have no family, no anything around.
Inherently, right? You have to. Yes.
Yeah, like it's a human thing. And the thing that I find funny about this is with the Serpo papers, there's so many obscure details that are given without any actual, like it doesn't make sense. And I remember a lot of...
somewhat of an understanding of how the military works, but yeah. Like vaguely.
Yeah.
Just like used as a credence and not actually within the story.
It seems like actual military lingo. Like who else would know a word like sheep dipping? Just sprinkled within, which I believe we saw last time, but we saw a lot of contradictory things, a lot of things that don't even make sense. Like what we were just talking about. They learned the entire English language with like one message.
But yeah. They also can't ever learn English. Like, that's yes. Over 10 years of knowing them, they don't
and
learn
again,
English.
That's the contradictory thing. And then you see a whole bunch of, like, weird military things thrown in. But I'm getting carried away again because it's the Serpo papers.
Every single record on each team member selected was purged, including their social security records, internal revenue tax returns, medical records, military records and any other identification records were either destroyed or collected and placed in a special storage location. Originally, about 56,000 files were screened for possible selectees. The screening process finally got down to 12. These were the best of the best. During training, which lasted roughly 6 months, there were 16 going through training. The four were replacements just in case one of the originals was injured or released for some other reason. That's a weird way, Chelsea, I just want to say. They said they were going to list these people as first as dead, and then they said, no, let's list them as missing. And then they're going to destroy every record of this person existing. Is that...
It's another
That seems like a terrible way to do that. Because if somebody's missing, somebody might actually look into them and then find it really weird that they don't seem to exist.
They only said that they couldn't have children. They didn't say that they couldn't have families. So that doesn't kind of make sense to that. They're assuming nobody's going to be looking for them.
And especially, they're missing. Oh, okay. I'm just going to stop looking. Whereas if you actually list them as deceased, maybe, they'll actually stop looking for them.
Yeah, like your brother or sister or whatever goes missing, and then you're like, oh, there's no record of them ever being alive. Well then, I guess I was the crazy one. Yeah.
Oh, well.
I guess that answers that. Back to my
team training. Each team member selected was sent to a special facility located at Camp Perry, Virginia. This was an intelligence training location. We took over a complex inside Perry. Most of the training took place there, but some special training was accomplished at Shepherd Air Force Base, Wichita Falls, Texas, Ellsworth Air Force Base, South Dakota, Dow Air Force Base, Maine, and isolated locations in Mexico and Chile. Why? I did not know about those last ones. The training lasted for 167 days. The team was allowed about 15 days off during this time period, but they were closely guarded. Just prior to their trip, each team member was transported to the United States Disciplinary Barracks, Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, and confined in locked cells. This prevented them from communicating with anyone from the outside world and kept each under close watch. Why would you give them 15 days off if you're just going to put them in jail before they leave?
Yeah, just do it now. Is this the overseer of it? I can't remember who's writing this. They don't say.
No, it's anonymous. That's the whole thing about this one.
He certainly knows a lot about everything, like every single move of this program, though.
Including what happens on the planet, yeah.
Yeah, including things that probably not any one person would know things about.
Yeah.
Like everything, every single detail.
Change of plans. We received a message from the Ebens stating they did not wish to make the exchange during their initial visit to Earth. They wanted to first meet and then plan the exchange in person. This created many problems since our team was ready for the exchange. We sent a return message, but we did not receive a reply. That actually is very logical from the Ebens. They were going to get catfished on that first date right there.
Oh, they sure were.
The landing. In December of 63, the Ebens sent a message confirming the time, date, and location of their landing. The message stated that two crafts were en route to Earth and would make the appropriate landing at the prearranged location. Note, during this time period, our government was suffering from the loss of President Kennedy. Some on the project wanted to cancel the exchange because of his death. President Johnson was briefed and decided to continue the event, although it was noted that Johnson didn't really believe it would happen. Fair enough, President Johnson. Our team planned for two locations, one cover location at Holloman Air Force Base near Alamogordo, New Mexico, and the other, which would be the actual landing location, was west of Holloman near the southern entrance to White Sands Army Post. The first Ebens craft entered our atmosphere during the afternoon of April 24, 64. The Ebens craft landed at the wrong location near Socorro, New Mexico. Our team was in place at White Sands. We were able to communicate a message to the Ebens craft that they landed at the wrong location. The second Ebens craft picked up the message and landed at the correct location. Meeting. The Ebens craft landed exactly at the location we sent. There were 16 senior U.S. government officials on the ground. Some were political and some were senior officials, including military officers. The Ebens exited their craft and walked under a pre-located canopy. The Ebens gave gifts of their technology. The Ebens had a crude translator device. It appeared to be some sort of microphone with a readout screen. Why the hell would they need to bring that? We've already figured it out.
Yeah, they already figured it out by the text messages that we were sending. One or two that said ASL.
The senior U.S. officials were given one of the devices, but Eben kept the other one. The officials spoke into the device and the screen showed a print form of the voice message, both in Eben and English. It was crude and hard to understand everything that was said. The exact transcript of the meeting won't be discussed at this time. The Ebens decided to make the exchange, but not until the following year. July of 65 was set, and the location decided upon was the Nevada test site. Planners did not wish to keep the same location for fear that something might leak. The team members were kept at Fort Leavenworth until May of 64. They were transported to Camp Perry. The team was isolated for the next 6 months, going over the same training they received, fine-tuning their individual skills and learning some newer skills. This gave the team an opportunity to better understand the Eben language. Although most team members had difficulty learning the language, the two linguists on the team were able to hone their language skills. In April of 65, the team was transported to Fort Leavenworth and confined until July of 65, when they were transported to Nevada. During the exchange, only a select few officials were present other than the preparation crew for the exchange team. The Eben craft landed and our team was placed on board. That's the end of that one. It seems like they spent like 3 months in jail at the end of their time on Earth.
What did they tell their actual families as they were going?
They didn't, because they're missing. But they also got 15 days leave during that first 6 month period. And then they didn't talk at all about leave on that second 6 month period.
Somebody's really bad at storytelling.
And just so we're on the same page, 165 days is not 6 months. 6 months would be about 184 days. So it's like almost exactly 5 months. I guess you could add those 15 days, but it said it was included in that period. But again, Richard Doty said he's not good at math.
Richard Doty's not good at a lot. I still love that the Ebens poop like cats.
They are great poopers. Okay, we'll move on to the next one. This was the ninth posting by Anonymous on November 30th, 2005. Each team member had to endure extreme psychological and physical training. In one training test, each team member was locked inside a 5x7 box buried 7 feet underground for five days. With just food and water, no contact with anyone else, and in total darkness. This tested several factors. It doesn't list the factors.
Oh my god. So these people were actually kidnapped and wiped off the face of the earth to be tortured?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just want to emphasize, this tested several factors. That is the whole sentence, and then the next paragraph begins after that that says each team member also took a pill with them. Okay. We don't know what factors that tested, but it was several.
Several of them. Of course. It would. It would.
It sure would. How much poop they could make in a box over a 7 day period.
For one, that's one factor. Oh, dear God.
Each team member also took a pill with them. Pill is in quotation marks for some reason. The pill was standard issue for intelligence agents operating behind enemy lines. The pill could end their life if, for some reason, the Ebens turned out to be hostile.
Okay.
Several selected members, brackets, pilots, were trained on flying an Eben craft, one of which was the one captured near Western New Mexico in 49. The plan called for the select few to fly the craft back to Earth in case of an emergency. There were four pilots on the team. These four spent many weeks at the Nevada complex learning to fly the recovered Eben alien craft. It wasn't hard to fly, once one could understand the operation of the controls. I'm sure many of the UFO sightings back in 64-65 around the West could be attributed to these test flights by our team members. Selected team members carried small containers of liquid nitrogen. Ebens were vulnerable to extreme cold. In case the Ebens turned hostile, the liquid nitrogen could be used to neutralize Ebens during an escape attempt. The team members were instructed to spray the substance directly into the face of an Eben. EB1 was found to be vulnerable to this. Oh, man. I really don't like the thought that they just sprayed EB1, just this idiot mechanic that didn't even know English, in the face with liquid nitrogen several times just to make sure he was vulnerable to it. And it wasn't just a one-off.
He wasn't just, like, having an allergic reaction or something.
They probably asked him to translate something. He's like, I don't fucking know. I'm an idiot. And then they sprayed him in the face while he was looking at it. As for the liquid nitrogen matter, the liquid nitrogen was placed in a special container, just like we do today. The briefing document doesn't state the type of container, just that each member had a small container.
And this pill that'll kill him.
It takes them months to get to Serpo. So, like, this had to keep liquid nitrogen safe and stable for months. And that would be like for the one-off chance, like immediately upon their arrival, they needed to escape.
The funny thing is, they're just like right away without knowing who these people are. They're just like, yep, let's have an exchange program.
Also, let's psychologically traumatize the people we're going to send there.
Yeah, let's
and give
do it.
Them so suicide options and options to also harm anyone around yes. them.
Really good options to harm anyone around them. Let's fuck them up and give them PTSD and then unleash them onto another society.
Of the time of them training and waiting to go, like 40% of it is spent in isolation or in a box underground.
It probably wouldn't go good, actually, as these papers suggest when they got there. They're like playing baseball, pooping a lot. So much and sometimes so little. It just seems like something that wouldn't actually be done if they were, you know, had so much psychological damage prior to training to leave Earth. They might be a whole lot of fucked up in there.
However, during the return debriefing, the team found the Ebens to be so docile, each team member quickly discarded these bottles of liquid nitrogen when they arrived on Serpo. The Eben realized the team had the substance, but never questioned the reason for bringing it. As with weapons, each team member had a handgun and rifle. The Ebens realized these were weapons, but again, never questioned why the team members were bringing them along. But each team member never carried the weapon except during the exploration of Serpo, and then only certain team members carried them. That's the end of posting 9. You think it'd be weird seeing them, like, just pour out this liquid that does this stuff to the ground?
If they were to just pour it out, though, wouldn't it still have, like, you know how you cut onions real close to you? It makes your eyes water? Would it not?
No, it wouldn't freeze the things right around it. If you've ever seen people use liquid nitrogen, you can get pretty close to it without feeling its effects. And I don't think they poured it out in, like, say, an EB's face.
Yeah. I find it funny that that's what they brought, not, like, bear spray or something.
It yeah,
had to be liquid nitrogen.
They found that most effective against EB1, which maybe this is why he only knows 30% of the language.
It could only be liquid nitrogen, and you guys get a suicide pill.
The thing that can't be stable for more than a year in a bottle.
It's gonna be tight, but just in case you get off the aircraft and we realize...
You just get those bad vibes.
Here's enough to
speak, or you know, like, that anxiety is overwhelming day. Not being in a confined space for more than a day. But I think this is where I'm going to end it off. I think we've been going about an hour, so I think this is a good spot to end because the next one's looking fairly long. Yeah, I think this is a fun thing to return to every now and then because these are beautiful.
It is beautiful.
It couldn't have been better if David Wilcock was narrating it in Angry Dads.
Can I just read? Did we read part of a blog from Serpo.org?
No, I didn't read any of them. Are they very fake?
Can we just end off
yes.
on some poetry here? From Serpo to Innisfil, intergalactic relocation secrets unveiled. It does seem like they're picking up on the vibes of Serpo.
And this one seems to be written by a Walker Jeff.
Walker Jeff, gather round, youngsters, and let this old-timer spin you a yarn that'll make your head spin faster than a UFO doing loop-de-loops over Area 51. It's a tale of cosmic proportions, spanning from the far reaches of space to the serene shores of Lake Simcoe. So, grab yourself a cup of joe, settle in, and prepare for a journey that'll take you from the mysterious planet Serpo to the charming town of Innisfil, Canada. The Serpo Saga, a cosmic exchange program. Now, back in my day, we didn't have fancy smartphones or internet doohickeys, but we did have secrets, big ones, and none were bigger than the hush-hush exchange program that sent 12 brave U.S. military personnel to a planet called Serpo in the Zeta Reticuli star system. This wasn't no ordinary field trip, mind you. It was a top-secret mission that lasted from 1965 to 1978, longer than some folks' marriages. These courageous souls embarked on a journey that would make Neil Armstrong's moonwalk looked like a stroll in the park. They packed their bags, said goodbye to Earth, and hopped aboard an alien spacecraft faster than you can say, beam me up, Scotty. For 13 long years, these intrepid explorers lived among the Eben aliens, learning their ways, studying their technology, and probably trying to figure out how to use an extraterrestrial toilet. Now, I know what you're thinking. Gramps, have you finally lost your marbles? But let me tell you, the story's got more layers than your great Great Aunt Mildred's seven-layer dip. The Serple Exchange Program has been the subject of heated debates, whispered conversations, and enough conspiracy theories to fill a library. So you might be wondering, what in tarnation does this interstellar hellabaloo have to do with Innisfil, Canada? Well, hold on to your hat, because I'm about to connect the dots faster than you can say alien abduction. You see, after spending more than a decade on a distant planet, those brave souls who returned from Serpo had a hankering for something different. They'd seen the stars up close, walked on alien soil, and probably tasted some mighty peculiar space food, but now they yearned for a place that combined the best of both worlds. The excitement of a new frontier with the comforts of home. And that's where Innisfil comes in, like a shining beacon of hope in the vast Canadian landscape. This charming town, nestled along the western shore of Lake Simcoe, offers a slice of paradise that's out of this world, but not too far out. It goes on and on. This is
it is really long.
It's definitely AI.
Oh yeah.
Listen to this one. The cosmic terrestrial balance. Why Innisfil feels like home. Number one, natural beauty. Number two, peace and quiet. Number three, community spirit. Number four, room to grow. Number five, modern amenities. And it goes on and on from there. And it even has a link to Innisfil real estate.
Huh. I'm just looking. This is like an hour and a half outside of Toronto.
Yeah, gives me a feel like it's a bot that just looks for websites that are expired.
Interesting.
But the weird thing about it is that it kind of has an idea about what Serpo is.
And it's trying to make money off it, too.
This is definitely AI. Definitely. Like,
oh, yeah. Whole website's like, AI. The fact that it's trying to be an old person but hip in its writing style.
Yeah. Like, it's so weird. But I just thought that I read a little bit of that because I was like, that's fucking weird.
That is great. We will include a few of those in the next one, too.
Yeah.
I don't know which is better, the AI stuff or the actual Serpo papers.
Yeah. I think both are equally good. Because the Serpo papers are definitely not AI. They're definitely Richard Doty.
Who definitely is not an AI. He is a very real individual.
Yes. And he sucks at telling stories.
In any event, I have been Taylor, here with Chelsea. We are Journey to the Fringe. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Journey to the Fringe. If you have liked what you have listened to, please like, share, subscribe, or follow, depending on what venue you are listening to us through. Also, please, if possible, leave a 5-star review, as that really helps us in the algorithms. Should you wish to interact with us, please check us out on your social media of choice. I bet you we are there. And if you really want to communicate with us and give us ideas for new episodes or tell us that we're wrong and terrible, either way, please send us an email at journeytothefringe@gmail.com. For now, I'll see you in the next episode.